The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Okay, folks, great to have you along. Joe Malloy with you. Hope you're all enjoying the sunshine wherever you are. Football show is fairly stellar this evening. John Barnes is going to join us as England start to wobble and wonder and the team are booed off on Friday nights. John Barnes on the way at 9 o'clock. Rob Daly, an expert in German football, is going to join us as well. Germany, welcome back. Kilkenny beat Galway in the Camogie final last night at Croke Park. Aisling Connolly, former Galway All-Star, will give us her verdict. The Ireland men's sevens team are going to the Olympics. Jordan Conroy, very happy man, 11 tries over the weekend, blistering pace, and he's going to join us on Monday Night Rugby. And of course, the US Open in the Gulf, it was, if you didn't stay up for it, a stunningly topsy-turvy Sunday. In the end, John Rahm, major winner in waiting for several years now, came through with amazing putts on the 17th and 18th to pip Louis Westhuizen, the first Spaniard to ever win the US Open. Dermot Leese joins us at 7:30. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello to you. Happy Monday, Richie.
Happy Monday, Joseph.
And Dave McIntyre, come on in. How you doing, Dave?
Evening, gentlemen. How are we doing?
I was like Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood, screaming, my boy, when the news came through of Billy Gilmore. Oh, man, that hit me, Dave. That hit me right where it hurts, in the chest, when that came through. And now the more I think about it, I think it's perfect. He came, he saw, he conquered, he walks off into the sunset. This is Billy Gilmore's tournament now, and he walks out on a high.
Well, you've done very well to try and eke out some sort of a positive from that situation,
Joe. No,
that's
terrible.
Optimism at its absolute purest. Yeah, it's terribly disappointing news. Anyone that got to watch the England-Scotland game just wants a little bit more of Billy Gilmore, especially given the fact that if Scotland don't progress, we probably won't see much of Billy Gilmore in the coming months, because it's highly unlikely he's going to see an awful lot of game time in that Chelsea midfield, unless Thomas Tuchel has really taken an awful lot in the snippets he's seen of him over the last couple of weeks. But it's a massive blow to Scotland. He looked like a man well beyond his years in that game against England. But it's a very messy situation, isn't it? It's bizarre that there's nobody in the Scottish camp that's forced to go into self-isolation, yet two England players. It's one of the vagaries of the self-isolation system that we have never really managed to understand. I know Croatia are looking at this situation thinking, how on earth is it the case that there are no Scots forced to self-isolate when Croatia were pressured into playing a game, even though several of their players are forced into self-isolation? There's the whole geography of it as well. Just because Scotland happened to be in Middlesbrough when the positive case came through, the rules are different to where it would have been the case if they were in Scotland, because the restrictions are different. But the story that Billy Gilmore is missing is a hugely disappointing one, yes.
Yeah, and we'll miss the round of 16 match if they qualify. I mean, he did obviously get substituted. I think he was just wrecked. And I think that Scottish midfield three worked incredibly hard, and they were sprinting out to Reece James and Chilwell every time they got possession, because Scotland were very much playing back five. And for the first 15 minutes, there was a settling in period. But, Richie, there was a glorious 20-25 minute spell there where young Billy Gilmore, just 19 a few weeks ago, picked up the game on his Scottish competitive debut and put it in his back pocket, and it was glorious stuff. England now spiralling into all sorts of recriminations as well.
But you know what? The Gilmore performance is made all the better for the fact that during the first 15 minutes, he was quite obviously struggling. I was watching I was on ITV, wasn't it? Yeah. And Ali McCoist was pointing out that, and I think Lee Dixon too, that Gilmore was huffing and puffing a little bit in the opening 20 minutes, and that he was really struggling to get, I don't think to the pace of the game, but I think he was struggling with the occasion. And somewhere along the line, he either just bucked up himself or somebody put an arm around him and said, listen, man, you've got this, you're good enough, let's go. Mm. And from that point on, he was absolutely superb. And that Scotland team, I mean, I mentioned it on Friday night, like, they were so well drilled and so well coached, and all credit has to go to Steve Clarke, because every single member of that team that was on the pitch absolutely knew their jobs. From the kickoff, pretty much, when you saw Lyndon Dykes go in on one of the England players and leave them floored, I think it was Ben Chilwell, and left him on the ground. And you thought, you know, Scotland are here to let England know that they are not going to be trampled on. And they throttled the life out of them on Friday night and caused them no end of problems themselves. And yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. The only unfortunate thing is that Scotland now go into this match not only shorn of Gilmore, but effectively off their best performance, and yet they're yet to score a goal and they get to win a match in this competition.
Yeah, I think in part because England were so predictable as well. Like, I don't think, genuinely, I'm not sure Declan Rice has made a forward pass in 180 minutes. It's like he's been told to go from one of the more complete midfielders in the Premier League to now just sideways sit, don't move. There was one run into the box towards the end of the game, one moment where he took a chance and almost got in the end of something, and you're thinking, this can't be the instruction for England going forward. There has to be a bit more verve and adventure about their midfield. So we'll talk to John Barnes. I mean, it should be really interesting even to get his take on the Sterling, Foden, Grealish situation as well. Really looking forward to having John Barnes on at 9 o'clock. And
you don't genuinely believe, Joe, that England are in crisis, though, do you?
A crisis is a strong word, obviously. Crisis is a strong word. But I think they've got serious questions now. It's like Harry Kane's form. I think they have to stick with Kane, don't they? They can't drop Kane, and he genuinely does look off the mark now. And, you know, there's just certain issues, like against Croatia, which didn't seem problematic, and now on the back of the Scotland game do. Like, suddenly you're looking back in the Croatian game thinking they really didn't create very much, and that seemed okay under those circumstances. But now you're wondering if, for all the creative talent they have, maybe they are just a bit predictable at the moment. Especially like Kane being out of, if Kane's informed, that covers up a multitude of sins. So that's a big issue, and he was just a big part of their World Cup journey. But crisis obviously not. They're 4 points after two games. But I certainly think, I would think Gareth Southgate and the lads are sitting down looking at each other in the coach's room saying, we're not quite humming here. This isn't really happening, actually.
Well, we don't hear this narrative around the rest of the top level teams who are listed amongst the favourites pre-tournament. Name one of the top sides that has been impressive, apart from maybe Belgium. But Germany looked terrible in their first game. Portugal looked dreadful the other night against the Germans. The French have had serious question marks over them. The Denmark-Belgium game, for me, showed that the Belgian defence are what it is, ageing and hugely vulnerable. They could have conceded three or four that night.
Yeah.
The Netherlands looked like they could concede every time the opposition counter-attack on them. Have I left out one of the top sides? Italy, really, the
Italy,
only side
Dave,
that have really
yeah.
impressed me.
Yeah, fair.
So, I mean, I would put England in the same boat as the rest of those.
Going to qualify.
Time to iron out the kinks.
Yeah.
Maybe the fact that Mason Mount is missing for this game, it means it's going to bring in a different kind of attacking player, possibly Grealish, possibly Jadon Sancho. They might all, for me, all England need is a bit of a spark.
Maybe, yeah. And you make very good points. I guess maybe, say, for instance, France have a back catalogue to keep everybody calm, and it feels like more of a wobble from France. I mean, England played 3-4-3 for a lot of the last 2 years and pitch up here not knowing their best team. So actually, you kind of need them maybe to get going. Whereas France, you would have a certain fate they'll click as the knockout stages progress, you know?
Yeah, their history and their CV is weightier than that of England. But England did reach the semi-final of the World Cup, they got to the semi-finals of the Nations League. It's not like they're utterly devoid of success in their recent history either. Mm. I can understand England fans were expecting to see a little more expansion, a little more ambition with the ball. They do seem to be playing with the handbrake on a little bit, but group stages tend to be that way. They've got 4 points of their opening two games, and there's a very good chance they're going to beat the Czech Republic and go through as group winners.
Yeah.
What else are England fans looking for?
Well, they were humming in the World Cup group stages, remember? They were scoring 4 and 6 and looking threatening. I guess you're looking for a goal against Scotland, more than one goal in 180
World Cup, yeah.
minutes.
To be fair, World Cup group stages are a little bit different in terms of how they're seeded, because you're going to get one or two cloggers in there against whom you can probably rack up a score. And I think England did that in the last World Cup.
There's no Panama in this group.
Yeah.
What is all this England defending going on with you two? Mother God.
things are definitely far tighter, but you would, like, they've only won matches by one goal for the last five games of those that they've won.
Yeah.
That we're setting aside the Scotland one. So clearly they don't win by millions.
No.
And they're still trying to find a way. They have all this attacking talent, and Gareth Southgate even mentioned it in his press conference this evening. They have so many good attacking players, but I don't think he's stumbled across the right combination that really makes all of them home, or at least makes his side home to the degree that which, you know, to which they should. Allied to that, like, you can go back to the midfield problem. We're talking about Declan Rice. Calvin Phillips didn't have as good a game or close to it on Friday night as he did against the Croats. That'll be a worry for them as well. And the chopping and changing of defence too, possibly Harry Maguire to come back in. There's still questions to be asked over this England team, and they're probably going to come up against a pretty tough last 16 opponent. So you can understand to a degree the England fans' worry. A lot of them have gone OTT with this in thinking that it's doom and gloom and the end of the world. I think England are exactly where they are for a reason. I don't think there's any complaint. They're, you know, probably performing to expectation. Mm. There's just a little sense that there's probably another 10 or 15% left in the tank there that they should be showing.
The booing. Booing at full time. My God, it's just so funny. We'll talk. So John Barnes on the way at 9. really interested to get his thoughts on all that. Rob Daly will talk to us about Germany. Thomas Müller, he's back. He's playing beautifully. After his 18 assists and 11 goals in the Bundesliga last season, he re-emerges after 2 years dumped out of the squad with his 100-plus German caps, 10 Bundesliga titles, 2 Champions Leagues, 2014 World Cup, a win, 10 goals in the World Cup, 3 more than Ronaldo or Suarez or any other currently active player, and he is just orchestrating things. He said he's a Ramduder. He said, I'm not a striker. I like to be in the space in behind the opposition's midfield. That's where I can hurt the opponent most of all. I'm a mix. I'm a Ramduder. It's about instinct. I looked up Ramduder, Dave. It roughly translates as a space interpreter. And I thought, that is Dave McIntyre at Astro. A space interpreter.
Marking space is definitely something that I've been accused of in the past. I think Müller just does it at a slightly higher level than I.
Oh, man. Well, so that is on the way with Rob Daly. We should kick off the news round. I do want to get your thoughts on the golf last night, Dave. So, Richie, you'll get to that. We will jump in. It is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game. We change it. Gillette made of what matters. You're starting, Rich, I think it's fair enough, with the action this evening, if not the golf. I'll allow that.
Yeah, Austria have joined the Netherlands in qualifying for the last 16 of Euro 2020. A first half goal from Christoph Baumgartner was enough to give Austria a 1-0 win over a pretty poor Ukraine in Bucharest this evening to secure second place in Group C. The Dutch finished top of that group on maximum points after a 3-0 win over North Macedonia in Amsterdam. 2 goals from Jorginho Wijnaldum, the other from Memphis Depay. And Ukraine are left sweating on whether their third place is good enough for qualification. Looks likely that it won't be. Still to come tonight, 3 countries go into the final round of Group B games with hope of qualifying alongside Belgium. Denmark need a win over Russia in Copenhagen to stand any chance of progress, while Finland face Belgium in St. Petersburg, and both of those games kick off at 8 p.m.
So Memphis Depay scoring again this evening, Dave. It must cause Manchester United fans almost a scratch of the head. I would think you'd struggle to remember many of his games between 2015 and 2017 when he played 33 and scored 2 goals. It didn't look like he was going to blossom into the Netherlands' main man here.
No, well, it's not like he's been an overnight transformer in terms of the form that he's been showing over the last couple of years at Lyon and more recently with the Netherlands either. It did take a little bit of rehabilitation. He had a serious injury as well that he had to get over. Trying to think back on his time at Old Trafford, I can remember his first European game for them against Club Bruges in a Champions League playoff where he did very well, and that looked like important to things to come. Clearly he didn't get on with Louis van Gaal, didn't seem to settle at all, and was obviously always in your mind a better player than he was showing at that time. And he has gone on to bigger and better things, and now he's Barcelona bound as well. So he's really going to be tested. And if he is the world-class operator that I think some people believe him to be, and that he definitely considers himself to be, well, we're going to find out over the next couple of seasons at the Nou Camp.
Mm. Rich, few good games here at home tonight.
Absolutely, there is, yeah. There's a big Dublin derby at Dalyman Park tonight with SSC Airtricity Premier Division leader Shamrock Rovers making the trip to resurgent Bohemians. Second place St. Pat's welcome Finn Harps to Richmond Park. And there's a loud derby clash of Drogheda United and Dundalk at Head in the Game Park. Elsewhere, Sligo Rovers go to Northwest rivals Derry City, and the bottom side Longford play host to the side just above them, that's Waterford. And all of those games kick off at 7:45. As we mentioned there, Billy Gilmour is going to miss Scotland's must-win Euro 2020 group game with Croatia tomorrow after testing positive for COVID-19. The Chelsea midfielder will have to isolate for 10 days, meaning he won't feature again unless Scotland reach the quarterfinals. The England players and staff all return negative tests. However, Ben Chilwell and Mason Mount are going to miss their final Group C game against the Czech Republic. The pair are isolating as a precaution after an interaction with Gilmour. Scotland, as we say, needing a win over Croatia to hope to stand any chance of progress. And their manager, Steve Clarke, was putting on a brave face this evening, claiming the disruption has been minimal.
Just a little bit, obviously. Today's training was a little bit disrupted, but the bulk of the work's been done over the pre-camp, over the training days early on the tournament. So we've done the bulk of the work, I think. You saw for yourself, the team know exactly what they're doing when they get to the pitch, both games. The team's been organised, they know what they're doing, they know what they have to do, and that will stand us in good stead for the game tomorrow.
So as Rich said, Chilwell and Mount knocked out as well. They've been testing negative. Dave, we don't know, maybe there was more interaction under the stands in the dressing room and they were hanging out, all Chelsea teammates obviously, but on the face of it, it looks like it was the little hugs and arm locks and nuggies and you know, we're all mates at full time on the pitch, which has knocked out Chilwell and Mount.
Yeah, that would appear to be the case. Certainly that's the only information that we can go off anyway. Look, we're kind of floundering around in the dark when it comes to these situations, but I mean, he was in a dressing room pre and post match with his Scotland teammates.
Yeah.
And he has been dining with them and he's been on buses with them. It's just bizarre that the two people singled out to go into self-isolation aren't even part of the Scottish squad. It's just, again, one of the vagaries of COVID-19 that we will probably never understand long after this pandemic has left us.
There are unconfirmed reports that Wexford County Board did phone UEFA and put in the claim again.
Joe, you're better than that. Come
TBC, on. TBC. We have to see what happens. We have to see how that plays out. Bad news for Sam Bennett.
Yeah, he's had to pull out of this year's Tour de France. The Carcassonne sprinter had failed to recover in time from a knee injury. His place on the De Kooning Quickstep team goes instead to Mark Cavendish. Last year, of course, saw Bennett become the first Irish rider since Sean Kelly in 1989 to win the Tour's green jersey. A little bit of added spices put to this by the De Kooning Quickstep manager, Pat Lefebvre, who says, "I cannot prove that he does not have knee pain, but I'm starting to think that more and more it is more fear of failure than just pain. I'm starting to think it's more performance anxiety than just pain." So things not so rosy between Bennett and his team management at De Kooning Quickstep.
Okay, we'll see how that plays out over the next couple of weeks. Meanwhile, latest on the Olympics. So where are we on is it fans or residents, Rich?
Fans have to be residents, essentially, to be permitted into this year's Tokyo Olympics. Crowds of up to 10,000 or 50% of each venue's capacity will be allowed to watch the events, but obviously none from overseas. A report by Japanese medical experts issued last week suggested that the Games should take place behind closed doors. That now, it seems, is not going to be the case and that we will have some fans present.
Lads, a stunningly good US Open last night was the high point. Mackenzie Hughes' ball getting stuck in the tree and fans shouting, "Shake that tree," wonders Tom. I think it was. That was just bizarre. I mean, and he was going along okay. His ball didn't even land in the tree. It hit the cart path and bounced up into the tree and then got stuck in the tree. And the fans were all under the tree and they all started chanting, "Shake that tree, shake that tree." But then did nothing. I mean, I presume if they had shook the tree, not on Mackenzie Hughes' instruction, and then the ball had come loose, he could have played it where it lies.
I would imagine if it's nothing to do with him, yeah, that it's very unfair that he would be penalised. I was just waiting for someone to just go up the trunk of the tree, a bit of a kick, because it looked vulnerable, the ball. It looked like it could be prized clear with just a bit of movement. But it was the fact, as you say, it didn't even go in on the fly. Comes crashing off the ground and back up again off the path and get in between two small branches. It was such a difficult rub of the green for him, and it was one of many over the course of the day where you just felt sorry for the players, apart from what happened to Bryson, who is permanently on my hit list after the round yesterday. But I mean, the manner in which Rory plugged in that bunker, I mean, that's a terribly bad break. There was a couple of other incidents over the round where you're just feeling for the players, because look, some days it goes for you. John Rahm, I was certain he had driven that ball out of bounds on the back nine. And then, you know, the ruling goes his way that it's a temporary obstruction, and he takes a free drop about 2 metres clear of the boundary, and he's able to get down there for a par. So on those little moments, you win or lose majors, and that's just a fact of sport.
Yeah. Rich, you have some John Rahm for us? We might jump in there.
Yeah, we'll jump in there. John Rahm claimed his first major win at the US Open last night, courtesy of birdies at each of his last two holes. The Spaniard ended the week on Torrey Pines and 6 under par and a shot clear of Louis Westhuizen. Rory McIlroy dropped 4 shots on his back nine to scupper his chances. He ended tied for 7th on 1 under par. Shane Lowry had a disastrous final round of 79 to end the week on 13 over. And despite the occasional disappointment, Rahm had confidence that his putting would see him over the line last night.
"When I missed my putt on 14, I told Adam, you know, it was a good putt. The one on 13 was slightly pushed. The one on 14 was a good putt. It's just point at greens happened. It didn't roll as truthfully as it could have rolled. And I told him, 2 fours and 2 threes on the last 4 holes wins the tournament. And that's what I set out to do, you know, and play 4 really good holes. And not that I was really thinking about it on 17, but last time I won here, I finished birdie eagle, and I knew I could finish strong again. I knew history could get close to repeating itself, and I was aware of it hitting that putt, and I stayed patient all day. I haven't made many long putts all week. I made one on Thursday on 14, but that's the kind of putts I like, you know. I've made a couple of long left to righters in the past and some clutch moments, and I was able to get 2 more in the last 2 holes.
We recorded a Golf Weekly review this morning. You can get it on patreon.com and search for Golf Weekly. Peter Lawrie there said he reckons Rahm could easily end up with maybe 5 majors territory, as Port Stewart and Lahinch will attest. He'll go to the Open knowing how to play links golf and feeling pretty good about life. So he's a serious talent, Dave. So how do you characterise this then for McIlroy? Because on the 10th, before a 3-putt on the 11th and, as you said, a bad enough break on 12. He was on 4-under through 10 holes and eventual winners on 6-under. So, you know, for the first time in a long time, he's right in the teeth of a major on a Sunday.
Yeah, and if he matches John Rahm's back nine in terms of scoring, he's in that playoff at 6-under par. There was only one other player in the top 10, I think Scotty Scheffler, that played their round and over par yesterday, which is really disappointing. I know there was a lot of players that were really struggling. Bryson DeChambeau at one stage looked like he was going to be the man that was going to go on and take it, and he finished outside the top 10. So bad was, I think he came back in 44. But look, it just depends whether you're taking the glass half empty or half full offshore at Rory McIlroy. It's the first time, I think, since Molinari won the Open that we've seen him in contention on the back nine of a major championship, and that's 2 years ago. So that's definitely a positive. He's exactly where he would want to have been starting off on the back nine. And he was not just the only major champion that really crumbled and frittered shots away when the pressure was at its greatest. It was a major championship leaderboard, bar John Rahm. You had Westhuizen, Koepka, Bryson, Rory McIlroy. I'm missing one there, haven't I? There was in there that had won a major in the past. And he wasn't just the only one that seemed to lose it in the back nine. But the negative is that when the pressure was there, he was unable to handle it. And he started to miss fairways with regularity. And that was the problem, where John Rahm was the steady Eddie, parred the first seven holes of his back nine, and then the putts dropped when needed. I think McIlroy will find it easy to take the positives out of it. If I was Louis Westhuizen, I'd be thinking, are there many more ways that I can find to lose a major? Because, I mean, 2010 at St. Andrews seems an awful long time ago now. I think he's had six top two finishes. And I did not feel he was going to win that major at any stage last night, despite the fact that he was leading for most of the day. I just think he manages to find a way not to get the job done.
Is your problem with Bryson his refusal to shed four as his golf ball sails towards the heads of fans? Yeah, it's
pretty much it.
Repeat
it's
offender.
Disgraceful. Yeah, it's absolutely disgraceful behavior. And look, you might get someone saying, well, he's driving the ball 330 yards off some tee box or something. Even if he shouts four, can someone that far away even hear it? But I mean, whether or not that is the case is irrelevant. Every other player that was involved yesterday, when they sprayed the ball right or left, had their arms flailing. They were screaming. You could see Louis Westhuizen shouting four and then almost cringing, flinching as he saw the ball career towards a crowd, hoping that he wasn't going to hit somebody with it. I think Bryson is letting that ball veer into the crowd in the hope that it hits someone on the skull and bounces back into play. Because what other reason is there for it? To stand there silently. We saw that shot. He bladed over a bunker into a crowd from no more than 30 yards away. If that hits somebody on the full, that is a very painful experience. We've seen people lose an eye. I know you signed some sort of unwritten disclaimer when you, if you pardon the paradox, when you venture into a golf tournament, that kind of thing can happen. But at least help the situation. Give the fans an opportunity to shield themselves, to brace themselves, maybe even get their hands over their eyes. Someone lost an eye to Ryder Cup a few years ago.
I think
it's despicable behaviour, and I don't know why he's not called out on it.
Well, that's a very good point. I don't know why the journalists aren't hitting him with that over and over again. Yeah, there was a woman blinded in one eye at the Ryder Cup in 16. It was by Koepka, but they were all at that Ryder Cup, all in the locker room. Koepka was incredibly shaken afterwards. I mean, my sympathy lay with the woman who'd lost her sight in one eye, but I'm sure it was a talking point in the team room. You might have thought that'd be a line in the sand, but here they are just blasting it and picking up the tee. It's strange. Leona Maguire, Rich, she did really well over the weekend, just missed out on a big, big win.
Yeah, she just missed out on the first win on the LPGA Tour last night. The Cavan golfer finished second at the Mayer Classic in Michigan. World number four, Nelly Korda, won on 25 under par, with Maguire ending up just two shots further back. Going back to the ticket and attendance issue, the IRFU confirming today that attendances for next month's test with Japan and the United States, a maximum of 3,000 fans will be at the Aviva for the visit of Japan, while that number will double for the following week's meeting with the United States. The IRFU has also announced that they're allocating 300 tickets for the Japan match to frontline workers, and also presidents of the local clubs around the country are also going to get tickets for that match. Kilkenny crowned Littlewoods Ireland National Camogie League Division 1 champions last night, and Aoife Doyle goal in the second half saw them beat Galway 118 to 115 at Croke Park. And the Ireland's men's sevens team are going to the Olympic Games this summer. Two second half tries from former Athlone Town star Jordan Conroy and one late one from Harry McNulty saw them beat France 28-19 at the World Rugby Sevens in Monaco. As the outright winners of the tournament, they take the 12th and final spot at this year's Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah, amazing. They were against France in the final. France always would have been ranked ahead of Ireland in the sevens. The sevens program really on the go since about 2015. And to say it's come to fruition here with a spot at the Olympics is an understatement. So Jordan Conroy, who's been a phenomenon for them and scored, as Richie said, 2 tries there and 11 tries over the whole weekend, is going to join us after 8 o'clock. And interesting story on the Allianz Arena. Germany were hoping to welcome Hungary with open arms, but it's not going to be allowed, it seems, Rich.
It seems not, no. UEFA won't allow Munich's Allianz Arena to be lit in pride colours for tomorrow's Group F meeting of Germany and Hungary. Several Bavarian politicians, including the Munich mayor Dieter Reiter, had called for rainbow lights to illuminate the stadium, as they have done on a number of previous occasions, in protest of Hungary's draconian anti-LGBTQ laws. However, a DFB spokesperson has told Bild this evening that UEFA will only allow stadiums to be lit in a uniform fashion or in the colours of the visiting countries.
Okay, fellas, we are out of time. Dave Mack, you're on OTBAM tomorrow, I hear.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Good man. 7:30, bright and early. Thanks for this evening. Appreciate it. See you.
Thanks, guys.
And Richie McCormick, I'll talk to you same time as ever tomorrow, Rich.
Same bad channel, Joe.
That was the news round with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. We've got Jordan Conroy, as I said, after 8 o'clock. We're talking Camogie final at around 20 to 9 or so. John Barnes on the football show at 9, plus Rob Daly talking German football. Up next, Dermot Leese will talk to us about John Ram winning the US Open.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.